Dear Regent Schellenberg, for your words and for the message from Regent Miller, who, as you stated, has worked with as much enthusiasm and as great positive influence as any in the completion of this dream. President Gamage has other monuments in the hearts and lives of many students and people. I suppose of nearly all those present today, our next speaker knew him for the longest period and worked with him as student and faculty colleague longer in the administrative tasks of what was known affectionately as the college and later the university. With great pleasure, I call upon Vice President Gilbert L. Cady to offer a brief tribute to his former chief, President Grady Gamage. Mr. Cady.
Governor Fannin, President Durham, Mrs. Gamage and Mrs. Wright, and other distinguished guests in our platform and the friends out here. My scholarly associates should not be surprised that this honor that is mine this morning brings to mind a Shakespearean observation. What the great ones do, the lesser ones will prattle of. I am privileged today to be among the lesser ones who speak, if not prattle, of the great ones and what they have done. And coming from the very least of the lesser, my words will not be equal to this auspicious occasion, nor will they measure up to the great man and his deeds of which I speak. The first words President Grady Gamage addressed to me in the summer of 1933, when I was a student assistant in the business office, were, "I'm Grady Gamage. Would you please show me this building?" It was Matthews Library, where the administrative offices were then housed. It was my honor then to show him that building, and it was my great privilege for the next 25 years to work and plan with him for the many structures required of a growing, emerging institution. Well, the building of buildings is done, and fortune has deprived us of the great joy of showing it to him. But I can assure you, my friends, that he knows this magnificent building, and he knows it well, for he was a visionary, a man of many dreams, but with an acute perception as well. He had a dream about a complex metropolitan university serving a variety of purposes with a university name worthy of that institution, and we saw it come to pass. He envisioned on this campus a vast engineering complex to serve the growing needs of business and industry, and we saw that become a reality. This auditorium, of course, is the realization of another dream, but he has seen it, and he has seen it well. This is commonplace for men of uncommon vision and perception. And now, if you don't mind, permit me to comment briefly on how it came about. The gold piece story is not an unfamiliar one, but it is a twice-told tale that we cherish most. It was back in 1912 that a doctor told a young man in Prescott, Arkansas, that he must move to a climate where the air was warm and dry. The young man had spent a year as a court clerk and his year as a public school teacher since graduating from high school. Dreaming of an opportunity to get a university education, and this bad news seemed to shatter all his hopes and perhaps his dream. But with the brashness of youth, he wrote to Governor George P. Hunt of Arizona to ask if the new state had a university, and if so, how he could enroll. The governor replied with a personal note, inviting this young man to visit him, and sent him the catalog of the University of Arizona. That left just one obstacle to hold this determined boy from answering his health problem, and if I may say so, his dream. It was the usual obstacle, money. But this was no average boy. He had demonstrated his willingness to work, and he had also shown a curiosity about the things around him. Fortunately, there was a man in the town who had looked at this poor Arkansas high school graduate and saw the promise more than the apparent. Mr. H.E. Bemis, the local lumber mill operator, gave young Grady Gamage a $50 gold piece to stake him for the trip to that university in Arizona. And the rest is history. A chronicle of achievements and inspiration recorded in the annals of this state and this great university, and so fresh in memory that it requires no repetition here. But so incandescently written that it will forever serve as a lodestar and a guiding light for the future development of Arizona State University and those who inhabit it. But to return to the gold piece story, what a success story. How typically American, and so inevitable that it should find its eloquent expression in this land of opportunity here in Arizona. Of the many splendid ways in which to view this great auditorium, I respectfully submit that among them we include the regard of it as an eternally priceless return on a $50 investment. A $50 investment in an Arkansas high school graduate, poor in health but rich in dreams, and with the determination to transform those dreams into enduring realities. Naturally, we regret that these two great master builders, the great architect of this university, and the great architect of an age, cannot share this exciting hour with us. In this great home of many mansions, of art and music, of poetry and song, of dance and drama, of thought and expression, but we can glory in the certainty that Grady Gamage foresaw it all.
May I report to you that I'm sure students of this age would accept paper money if no $50 gold pieces are available. Thank you, Vice President Cady, for that very significant statement. The creative spirit knows no boundaries and enters many fields. Our next speaker has earned her own reputation in the literary realm, in music, in musical composition, in design, in the remarkable mingling of light, color, fabric, and stagecraft in new and inimitable ways. In speaking to us today on the meaning and significance of this building, we are therefore truly privileged to hear not only from the administrative head of a great educational fellowship, a foundation, and association of architects, but also from an experienced and proven artist in many sensitive and demanding fields. It is with unusual gratitude and appreciation for her willingness to break short a European calendar and to make an early return to Taliesin West and honor us today that I now present Mrs. Frank Lloyd Wright.
I would like to begin with a sentence of Mr. Wright, which I have heard throughout my life with him, and that was, believe it or not, a quotation from the great Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu. He read from Lao Tzu that the reality of a building does not consist in its walls or in its roof, but in the space enclosed within. Lao Tzu meant that for a human being. Lao Tzu meant that the form which each one of us has does not determine really what we are within, but that which we are within determines our form. Visible. Mr. Wright took that very closely to his heart, and he said he was a bit embarrassed because he thought that he had invented this idea of the space within. But after that, he said, his pride got the better of him, and he said, he, Lao Tzu, taught it, but I build it. And I feel that this building here is a tremendous expression of that thought, that in this space in which we all are now, we seem to be contented even if nothing were happened in it. In this space seems to have intelligence of its own, integrity of its own, soul of its own. This kind of building that can project such a thought to everyone here certainly renders a great meaning to life. And all of us, no matter how strong in spirit, always need the regeneration of the ideas that are immortal. All of us, no matter how strong, sometimes fail to perceive the beauty due to great encumbrances and disappointments that life gives us. But if we can find a meaning here, and if we can feel that what this building represents, if we can understand the genius of a man who gave of himself, all of himself, in the building that he built, then it will give us courage to move on, because life without meaning has nothing to offer. And we search meaning everywhere. We search it in works of art, in literature. We search it in architecture to find it rather rarely. Because that, as my husband repeated so many times, is the blind spot of the nation. A new country had to do so much to establish itself and its individuality. It simply didn't reach far enough to also have architecture as a great form of art. But Mr. Wright did it here, right here in Arizona, which he loved, right in attached to these mountains, which he always drew inspiration from. It is here that he deposited a jewel on the head of Arizona, like a crown. He was extremely enamored of the rarefied air. He believed that all great religions had come from climates like this. And all those great religions, notwithstanding science, we still live by. It was such an inspiration for me to hear the speakers here tonight, each one speaking rather from the heart, not from the mind. And that does not happen very often. And I wondered, perhaps it was the influence of this building that put something in their voices that sounded real. Even that little academic touch, which we always connect as somewhat cut and dry, had completely disappeared out of their voices. I was very happy listening to hear the truth spoken from them. And I know that all of you have the same feeling. All of you are moved some different way, perhaps because the two great men are not here with us, and yet they are extremely here. When speaking of Grady Gamage, I saw him so vividly. I saw him coming to Taliesin, first time, to ask my husband to build a building. My husband came to me and said, Olga Ivanovna, There is a very nice fellow, the president of the university, Grady Gamage, asked me to design a building, but he has no money. Well, I said, but what? How are you going to build then about it? I don't know. I don't know. It is very tempting. Such a nice fellow. And he, over and over again, he said, I have faith in that man. I think he will do it. I don't usually do this. I don't break my ethics by designing without any guarantee whatsoever. But I am going to do it. And he did it. And I'm so happy that Grady Gamage fulfilled, as we were told here today, his dream. He fulfilled it because he knew that this university needed a lift. You remember at that time, especially when he began, he had rather shabby buildings around, or buildings more or less that completely bowed their heads to utility, to uniformity. There is always a complaint that to build a building with individuality takes much more money, but you will see that this building didn't take much more money, perhaps even less money, than some of the uniform buildings do today. He knew that this university needed some significant building, a building which would render significance to the university, which was still young and not as well known as it is now. It really developed very rapidly, as you all know. So Mr. Wright said, Grady Gamage, I'll build you a building that will be a gateway to your university. It will be a gateway to your intellectual level. It will introduce what you stand for. That university will become a famous great university because it did finally realize that there is a necessity to contribute culturally to the country by way of the building, as well as by way of literature, art, painting, music. So he said, I'll build you that building, and you will see it will make your university. Of course, it was made much before that. But that Grady Gamage saw the significance of a building that truly represents genuine American culture. And that is what it represents. And that is where our pride lies, that whoever comes from the world will see in this building completely an American architecture. And being American architecture, being indigenous, belonging, having integrity, that architecture will be understood then by the world. Because whatever is genuine, whatever is pure, whatever is consistent with the idea is understood by the world. Perhaps I would correct a little bit Audie Miller's words when he said that this building will be significant in decades to come. I would say in centuries to come. If this building is maintained, it will remain forever young, as my husband was forever young, and as Grady Gamage was forever young, because they had spirit of adventure in them. This building was an adventure. This building was a complete deviation from uniformity to the degree that it almost drew criticism which might have prevented it from being built. But you see, the great idea, a human heart, a will to receive something of beauty, of significance, of meaning, to life won over it. And I, for one, am humbly grateful that I can stand here this morning and tell you thank you all for having contributed your share to this fulfillment. Thank you.
And William Wesley Peters, the resident, the chief architect for this project, Mr. Rattenberry, the resident, and their associates, this great design has had the benefit of undeviating devotion, not only to the design itself and its intrinsic value, but to its economic and yet generous realization. They have also made a contribution of time and talent to the state of Arizona, far and beyond the usual architect's modest fee, which I should here like to publicly recognize and acknowledge and say a hearty thank you. Mr. Peters, we will be honored to receive your expression on this occasion.
We are here to dedicate a great building that exists because of the outstanding qualities of two men, the wisdom of President Grady Gamage, who recognized and sought the genius and vision of Frank Lloyd Wright to shape a new and finer auditorium for Arizona State University. Now, several years after the death of these two men, whose mutual efforts were here directed toward a common end, and as the result of the devoted and dedicated work of numerous others inspired by the lofty concepts initially promulgated by them, the Grady Gamage Auditorium stands as a significant legacy to the state of Arizona, a heritage partaking of the same original and genuine quality as the woods and the lakes, and the mountains and the canyons with which this state is so richly endowed. This relationship of the building to the environment is no accidental phenomena. The philosophy of Frank Lloyd Wright, manifested in more than 1,000 individual buildings throughout our land, proclaims that the same principles work to produce a noble building as function at a slower and grander pace to produce the beauties of nature which surround and enrich the life of man. The Grady Gamage Auditorium stands a living testimony to the validity of that thought which holds that the purpose and being of architecture to be the creation of a complete and organically related environment for a richer and nobler human life. It is possible that I might here enumerate for you the many different ideas and expressions that have operated to produce the building as it is and by way of which it achieves the manifold purposes and ends which were originally programmed. I might tell you of the various unique and original features, literally hundreds of firsts, which enable the building to accomplish its specific purposes in a simpler and more direct fashion than has been done before. But after all, the building itself is around you. It is here now and in the future for the enjoyment, instruction, and satisfaction of yourselves and of generations to come. Its functional operation and organic beauty may well be evidenced, tested, and proved for years and even centuries. The proof of a pudding is in the eating, and the effectiveness of a great theater or auditorium grows with its satisfactory use and in the hearts of those persons whose lives it enriches. I will, however, point out at least a few of the many innovations, ideas, and features that have been at work in developing the shape and structure or are evidenced in the countenance of the building which surrounds us. The first object in designing the Grady Gamage Auditorium was to provide a maximum number of comfortable seats with excellent visual and acoustic conditions at a minimum distance from the proscenium and stage. Although the auditorium was to be, first of all, a music hall designed for orchestral and chamber music, the original program stipulated that it was also to be capable of effective use as a theater, an assembly hall, as an opera house, and as a recital room. By use of the so-called continental seating system, which places the rows of seats farther apart and eliminates radial aisles in the central portion of the house, a greater sense of unity and intimacy was achieved. And a steeper floor slope was permitted, which provides better visual sight lines and much better acoustic conditions than has been possible with previous systems. We believe that this building is the first one in which this wide spacing of seat rows leading to spacious and conveniently located side exits has been employed not only on the main floor, but in the two balconies as well. As a direct result, there is a much larger proportion of excellent seats in this hall than in any other of comparable size and purpose of which I know. The advantages of this seating system have been made feasible and economically practicable by the arch bridges, which form a prominent feature of the exterior design and which provide emergency exits from all upper levels, as well as act as marquees or canopies at both entrances. The visual unity and acoustic intimacy of the interior is further accomplished by means of the flying balconies, which spring across the house with vertical space behind and around them to allow the free circulation of sound and air. This arrangement, following a principle early enunciated by Frank Lloyd Wright, is designed to enable the entire volume of the house to act as an acoustic unity and to save the seats under the balcony from separate or distorted sound. The orchestra shell, automatically telescopic, becomes, when, as you now see it, extended, an organic part of the main auditorium, virtually extending the walls, ceiling, and volumetric space of the house to the stage itself, and making of the whole one great room. A wall highly resistant to sound transmission separates the stage from the music school, the theater workshop, the orchestra and choral rehearsal rooms, and so forth beyond. Time forbids the mention of the very many other interesting and unusual features of the building, but I trust they will make themselves felt over the years in the efficient and unobtrusive functioning of the auditorium. When Frank Lloyd Wright died in 1959, he left a well-knit, highly trained group of men and women to carry on the educational and architectural work which he and Mrs. Wright had established at Taliesin and Taliesin West. Under the leadership of Mrs. Frank Lloyd Wright, the educational aspects of this program have expanded and flowered. I am proud, as chief architect of the Taliesin Associated Architects, to have been privileged to carry into execution this last large design of Frank Lloyd Wright. It has been a rich experience to see this building grow from the initial sketches left by Mr. Wright to the simple, although complex, structure you see around you. The effectiveness of this process would only have been possible through the efforts of the highly skilled members of the Taliesin Associated Architects, trained for years under the direction of Frank Lloyd Wright and inculcated with his principles, philosophy, and ideals. We have appreciated the help, direction, and guidance of Mrs. Frank Lloyd Wright, who has been actively interested in the development of this design from its inception, and who has been personally responsible for shaping the patterns of colors, textures, and interior materials throughout the building. The Taliesin Associated Architects have greatly enjoyed working with the officers and staff of the Arizona State University, particularly with President Durham and Vice President Gilbert Cady, without whose faith and diligence this building might never have come to exist. The care given to this project by others such as Mr. Ellingson, his efficient staff, and the many interested and helpful members of the Arizona State faculty are sincerely and deeply appreciated. To such courageous civic leaders as Mr. Lewis Ruskin and Mr. Walter Bimson, who supported this project in its early stages, to Mr. O.D. Miller, Mr. Lynn Lady, and the other regents, past and present, who have defended and forwarded this building, those persons who will gain from its use owe a genuine debt of gratitude. To Dr. Vern Knudsen and Mr. George Eisenhower, consultants respectively for acoustics, stage lighting, and mechanization, As well as to the middle and young, the mechanical and electrical engineers, go the thanks and appreciation of the architects, and to the general contractors, Robert E. McKee Company, and all the various subcontractors, a vote of approval for efficient and painstaking work in constructing an unusual and exacting building. Finally, I believe that it is in order to congratulate the people of the state of Arizona for securing a magnificent building at very moderate cost. A careful study indicates that the Grady Gamage Auditorium, with all its unusual features and exceptional facilities, has cost only a fraction of similar structures elsewhere, and in fact has been built at the lowest unit cost of any comparable structure of corresponding size, quality, and facilities built anywhere in this country within the last 10 years. I feel that this is an achievement of which we may all be proud, and which has provided a building which Arizona and the United States of America may well enjoy, cherish, and revere.